Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Todd Shrupp, FanDuel TV racing host, and I have done my research on the Derby this year. How much have you paid attention specifically to this Derby?
We've done some research. We've done some prep. I actually feel like we should have Lewis on for a second because Lewis has been talking Derby every time he comes on this radio station. So to ignore him right now wouldn't be right. Lewis, what questions do we need to ask our guest about this upcoming race?
I'm not quite sure because I'm not through studying, but ask your guests because they just scratched Rodriguez, and Rodriguez is one of the fastest horses in the race, and they might scratch Grande and American Promise, and that's going to leave the door open for journalism. Journalism is the horse to beat, but,
So Rodriguez is out and American Promise is out, which is great. We went to you because I was probably going to ask him about both those horses.
And Grande, American Promise and Grande might get scratched.
Okay, because Rodriguez was the Bob Baffert horse, so that's like a big deal, because Baffert is obviously, exactly. He's got his three-year deal that's now up, and he's ready to go. And Lewis, man, I'm glad we talked to you.
I'm going to call tomorrow because I'm not done studying. I'm going to give you my picks tomorrow.
All right, keep studying.
How do you study? Do you just watch a lot of film? You watch a lot of horse film?
No, analytics. I break it down. I have analytics. I do analytics.
Okay, can you walk us through some of those analytics?
Well, I take the first quarter, and if it's a specific time, I use a specific numbers, and I come up with their average stride.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the first maybe quarter, maybe, like, 54 average stride, and, I'll do it up until, like, 9 furlongs and see if it decreases or increases. And averaging their time and all that good stuff.
All right, early analytics. How are we feeling about, like, is that why you felt so good about journalism here? Is that early on?
Some say journalism is dead in 2025. I'm glad you like it, Lewis.
But this horse is quite alive. I assure you.
Actually, journalism. The estimate time at 10 furlongs. He had the fourth fastest 10 furlongs. But journalism is just, he's so disciplined. He's disciplined, and he looks like he's not three. I mean, whatever the jockey asks him to do, he does.
So you think he looks more like maybe like a mature 4-year-old?
Do we have a Danny Almonte situation on our hands here?
Definitely. So journalism is the horse to beat. But I'm going to find somebody to beat him tomorrow.
All right. Look at that, Lewis. Very comprehensive.
Journalism is like 19-year-old Albert Pujols. No one knows how old he actually is.
Now, do you gauge journalism? Like, do you walk like a 3-year-old filly in front of him to let him shake it a little bit just to see how the horses react?
Oh, he's not actually the right age. I don't know what's...
professionalism?
I don't know what's right in that world. I'm not sure.
That's like very mature horse. That's
I like you asking about like the all-22 version of a horse race, though.
What film are you watching? Like,
what's funny about horse racing, though, is you learn how to read the books, and then you really do. You don't watch any. You watch zero of these horses actually race. It just goes all off the times and all off their measurements and everything else associated with it. It's a lot like a lot of the NFL draft pundits. They watch zero actual film and just are like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, they check the boxes here, and he did this and that, and here we go. It's like, okay.
Hey, did you just take a shot at every draft analyst? You say Mel Kiper doesn't watch the film?
I didn't say all. I said some.
Oh, but did you correlate that to all racing analysts?
No, all racing analysts, they watch these races, sure. But yeah, it's more like what Lewis said. They do. They look at the book, and then they look at the times, they look at the splits, and then they go from there.
So it sounds like you think you could do a better job of scouting horses than actual analysts.
If I thought I could, I would do it.
I mean, not now.
Why are you trying to twist this into that?
I'm just trying to find out. You just seem very dismissive of
some draft analysts. No, I was explaining to you, the non-horse racing enthusiast over there, why Lewis didn't really have to watch any of the horse racing in order to understand what's going on with these horses.
Now I understand. You don't have to watch horse film to get ready for the Derby.
They just don't. They don't in that world.
So we are waiting on Todd Schrupp, FanDuel TV racing host there. And this is an inexperienced crop of horses. That was one of the first things I read about this one. 20 horses, though. I mean, boy howdy. They got 20 of them.
Boy howdy.
That's how you talk around the Derby.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you don't know this.
The Derby has the largest field. That's how this works.
When I was working at Northfield, boy howdy was said every other so-and-so. It was like...
Well, that's why you controlled the camera operator for turn three.
That's... Boy, how do you look fast? That's how you yelled down to him.
Yeah, you didn't get there without doing that.
Yeah, no. It wasn't by mistake. I'll tell you that right now. You ever watch horse film?
Yeah, no, not a thing for me.
Okay.
I watched a lot of horse races, though. Okay. I'll tell you that much. A lot of horse races.
Can you tell more if you watch them in person or if you watch, again?
I did all simulcast. I was at a horse track that had live racing, so that was a real thing. But it was a lot of simulcast.
It is time to get to the bottom of this Kentucky Derby and see. We're gonna split the juleps and all the great outfits, and we're just gonna get right down to some real horse hockey here. As we've got a FanDuel TV racing host, Todd Schrupp, on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Todd, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having us. It's that one time a year where I don't have to explain what sport I work in. The first Saturday in May translates to all sports fans, so I'm real excited to be with you guys.
I guess we got to start here. What stands out about the crop of three-year-olds competing this year?
The horse who's the favorite, Journalism. I think he's as good of a favorite as we've seen coming to the Kentucky Derby since California Chrome in 2017. California Chrome came from the West Coast. He swept through the Derby, swept through the Preakness, and then, of course, didn't complete the Triple Crown, but he was a horse that I thought going into the Kentucky Derby was far and away the horse to beat, and Journalism is definitely that horse as well.
How much of an impact is not having Rodriguez and American Promise in the field now?
It affects the pace dramatically. But the interesting part about the pace in the Kentucky Derby, it only takes one. It only takes one horse to kind of run off into that first turn, and if you get ridiculous fractions early on, then everybody's back in the race. So the two horses it comes down to are Citizen Bull and East Avenue. Coming into the year, East Avenue was the three-year-old everybody was looking at, and then he flopped in his first start in Louisiana. He came back in the Bluegrass Stakes over at Keeneland on the other side of Kentucky here during the Keeneland Spring Meet. He ran a huge race to be second, getting out on the lead. Citizen Bull draws the rail. That's going to be a problem even for a speed horse. The rail is difficult in the modern era of the Derby. So from a pace point of view, you're looking at two horses removed from the field that are, it's going to affect the pace. But I think ultimately Journalism is a tractable horse, and he's the type of horse that he doesn't need necessarily some type of pace meltdown where others in the field, a good example of that would be Sandman. Sandman in the Arkansas Derby had the best setup of any winner of any Kentucky Derby prep race this year. He had two horses who went out, ran insane fractions for the mile and an eighth, and he benefited. I don't think he's ultimately going to get that in the Kentucky Derby, but Journalism doesn't need to necessarily worry about a fast pace in front of him because he's always going to be in a good striking spot.
Todd, you mentioned something there that I always get fascinated about, how the race changes over time and how it changes with the current product of racing. So why is the rail as a draw? Why is that more difficult in the current Derby era?
Well, I will say this. They've done everything. They've gone out of their way to make sure that it's not a complete hindrance. If we had this conversation 20 years ago, I would never think about any horse along the rail. But they have changed the type of starting gate that they use. They've also changed just the layout of the rail. And so I'm not going to say you can't win from the one hole, but you also have to think it in the context of it's 20-horse field. So if you're on the inside, essentially everyone is bearing down on you at the start of the race, even if you're a horse that has speed. So you have to use a lot of horse in that opening quarter mile. The rail is not as difficult as it was 20 years ago. It's not as easy it was when they started the Derby over 150 years ago. It's somewhere in between. And I think the problem with the rail and the horse who's there is Citizen Bull is just not good enough to win this race and take them gate to wire.
Todd, I always like to look at trainer and jockey when I look at the Derby. I always think that matters so much, and it's something that I just lean on. Rosario and Tiztastic, that seems like a winning combination there for me.
Well, here's the thing. Steve Asmussen is like, you know, think of other sports where you have the coach who's never won the big game, but he's always got wins in the regular season that puts him right there, and he can't break through. Think about players who are in that category, just can't win the championship, but they're consistent winners. Steve Asmussen owns every record you could think of amongst trainers in thoroughbred racing. Nobody's won more races by him in a career. He's won more than 10,000. No one's won more races in one season than Steve Asmussen. But the one thing he cannot answer yes to is winning the Kentucky Derby. So he trains Tiztastic, and he trains another horse in the race called Publisher. But Publisher is a maiden. He's never won before. It's a true rarity to have a maiden won in the Kentucky Derby, to win it as well. So Steve Asmussen is without a doubt one of the best trainers. But when you talk about jockey trainer combinations, there's a big zero next to Steve Asmussen, and that is something eventually he'll get by and win. I'm not sure it's going to be this year.
Todd, who will have a better 2025, Journalism the Horse or Actual Journalism?
So that's the thing. When I look at the name and then I look at Publisher in the race, I'm wondering, is there your exacta if people want to play names? But I have to say, I have hope for Journalism when I come to the Kentucky Derby. And what I love about this sport is there are more stories here than anywhere else. Maybe you could draw a parallel to baseball as far as the interesting characters. But I think of some of the stories over the history of the Kentucky Derby. And one of them, there's the 60th anniversary of the late Bill Shoemaker, who's considered without a doubt one of the best riders of all time. He had won the Kentucky Derby in back-to-back years. And so in 1965, he was riding one of the favorites, trying to win for the third year in a row, a horse called Lucky Debonair. And this will show you how times have changed. He was at a party the night before he had to work out Lucky Debonair just 4 days before the Kentucky Derby. They got to 3 a.m. He's sitting in his tuxedo, and he says to his friends, should we just go straight to the barn? And the rumor is that the great veterinarian Alex Hardhill, who was a good friend of Bill Shoemaker, is like, let's just go to the barn. So Bill Shoemaker showed up at the barn to work out Lucky Debonair in his tuxedo. He changed out into riding boots. He took off the jacket, but the rest of his tuxedo remained, and he worked out a horse on the main track here at Churchill Downs. That's just one story out of 151 runnings of this amazing race. And I can tell you, there are even more fascinating stories on a daily basis in horse racing. So when you talk about journalism in 2025, and I relate it to horse racing, I think the Kentucky Derby is one of the greatest events to cover because of the stories. And one just, you know, point to this year's field. The best story in the race is a trainer by the name of Lonnie Briley. And he has Coal Battle in this race. Coal Battle was purchased for just $60,000. In a sport where someone like Bob Baffert, early in the year, he had a horse called Barnes, who was a $3.2 million purchase. Barnes didn't make it to the race. But here is Lonnie Briley with a $60,000 horse who had a huge spring and is going to be a factor in this race. You can't help but cheer for someone like that, and the media has done a very good job covering that story. I know on FanDuel TV, we were one of the first to do a profile of him, and it's something that got a huge response from our audience and is now kind of taken off with the national media.
When it comes to Bob Baffert, he's going to be all over the pregame, I would imagine. How can you relate that to maybe not a great or big horse racing fan, the ups and the downs that's happened there?
Well, here's the thing. I look at Bob Baffert as one, everybody knows Bob Baffert. He's a public relations machine for the game, good or bad. He's coming back after the 3 year suspension, but still everybody knows Bob Baffert, and most people will gravitate their money towards a Bob Baffert trained horse in the Derby. But I look at him like a great athlete who is now in the final chapter of his career, say a LeBron James. How many more championships does a LeBron James have? If we take Bob Baffert, I think people forgot along the way because he looks the same with the shocking white hair. He's 72 years old. In this race, Dwayne Lucas was to have American Promise at the age of 89. So let's just think for a moment. Bob Baffert, if he extends his career another 15 years, how many Kentucky Derbies will he win? I personally think he may not win another one. And a lot of people are like, well, no, he's always going to have the best horses. He's always going to have the good situation out in California. But I look at that as the peak athlete. We saw for Bob Baffert, his peak years were 2015 with American Pharoah, who won the Triple Crown, 2017 with Justify, who won the Triple Crown. And now he's facing the headwinds of what's going on with California Racing, where he's based. He's facing the headwinds of other people have caught up to Bob Baffert when it comes to the Derby. And here's the thing. The most expensive horse doesn't always win. Unlike other sports where you have a luxury tax, if you're a Chicago White Sox fan, after the first pitch on opening day, you know you're not going to the World Series. But in our sport, it's an even playing field. You cannot buy the Kentucky Derby. So having, quote unquote, the best horses doesn't mean you're going to win Derby after Derby after Derby. So when I look at Bob Baffert coming back after this three-year suspension, I don't see him in the same way that he was before the suspension. And I think the betting public needs to kind of catch up on that and realize, yes, Bob Baffert is an excellent trainer. Yes, he has great resources. But the Kentucky Derby is an even playing field each and every year.
Todd, this call was a win for journalism. Great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you.
I appreciate the time. And like I said, you guys have a phenomenal show covering all sports. And we really appreciate the time that you give to horse racing.
Very much appreciate that. Thank you so much. Todd Schrupp there, FanDuel TV racing host on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. We'll be moving on with the LeBron's non-committal comments after the Lakers got bounced from the playoffs. That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. I had so much more juice on talking about LeBron James' comments post-game after the Lakers got eliminated. I think I'm already annoyed by the layoff season with LeBron James, including J.J. Redick and his little temper tantrum yesterday.
Oh, you're always annoyed by J.J. Redick. Yeah. What else is new there?
And it does feel like somehow both the haters and the guys who thought he was going to be a great coach, it does feel like both sides somehow get vindicated here. Because he did get a team that was massively overhauled. What was that? Carry the two. 2 months away from the playoffs. He did get them to a top four seed. At the same point, he got out-coached, I mean, in circles.
De-pantsed. To have Luka and LeBron and not even threaten in that series, like that was, it's not a win for J.J. Redick. And in fact, I mean, you can make an argument, the biggest loser out of the whole entire series was J.J. Redick.
Yeah, this feels like, the way this is set up, it feels like the Darvin Ham, where, okay, you kind of overshot things this year, and so next year, if you're a 44-win team and miss the playoffs, J.J. is going to get fired.
I think he just lost a lot of people with how he treated the media in that whole interaction.
Yeah.
Where he just basically tried to undress the person asking the question as if they're an idiot for asking the question about why did you play all five guys for a whole second half of a game. That's never been done before, Nick.
I mean, in fairness, that's how JJ treated the media when he was in the media.
Yes. And to see him, but all throughout this stretch here when the Lakers are playing good basketball, though, he seems so much more congenial. He seems so much better at it all. And like you can tell, and maybe this is why he was so angry when he was in the media. You can tell when things aren't going very well for him, it's just a bad dude to be around.
So this is where we are. Like LeBron was asked last night, hey, what do you think about the rest of your career? Are you thinking about retiring?
Yeah.
Will you come back next year? I think was the literal question. And it was, he did the thing LeBron has done for the last 4 years, where he's given no one any earthly idea that he's going to retire. And yet he did the, I got to go home, talk to my family, and we're going to have a good conversation. And we're talking about how much longer I want to play. Nobody on the planet. We kind of jokingly asked Fedor at 420, which, guys, if you missed it, a lot of really good stuff there on Darius's health, a lot of really good stuff just across the way on this team and kind of heading into the playoff or heading into the Indiana series, 420. If you want to listen back on the free Odyssey app using the rewind function, we kind of sarcastically asked him. So like, is LeBron going to retire?
Yeah.
Because that's just like none of us believe. If the most shocking thing LeBron could ever do is if LeBron actually just retired today with no fanfare and just walked away.
No, but LeBron's smart, and he understands that if he talks about retirement, then instead of talking about him failing last night, they're just going to talk about him retiring.
Now, I think that's what's interesting, because in part of Chris's answer of course he's not retiring, was, LeBron isn't going to want to go out like that.
Right. He's Jeter in his final year with the Yankees. He wants to go to the Astros and have them present him with cowboy boots.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he wants the farewell tour.
Well, but I think, like, I think part of what Chris was saying was he doesn't want to go out on a team that gets gentlemanly swept in the first round of
playoffs.
I mean,
that might just be his reality, though. You know, he's
that's kind of what I was thinking.
He's 2-12 in his last 14 playoff games.
Yeah. Which, it's wild.
2-12.
LeBron has played in 292 playoff games in his career.
It's an amazing number.
And I think he's got a .633 career winning percentage in the playoffs. And I think Michael's got like a .636 winning percentage in his career in the playoffs. But I actually don't know. I think if you have a real offseason, if you actually go get a rim protector and get another shooter in there, I think LeBron and Luka can do a hell of a lot more than they did this year. It's just, I don't know if they can do it with J.J. Redick.
I mean, I think if they didn't have Luka, I have no reason to think that LeBron would want to come back outside of the adulation of it all. Like, if they didn't have Luka,
$50 million.
What is he? Well, yeah, okay, $50 million is nice. The man's worth $1 billion. You know what I mean? Like if he is he going to continue to just go ahead and play for money at that point? Because I don't know that he will. Especially when the wink-wink across the NBA is at the moment that he retires, all of a sudden he gets that expansion team that they're going to have in Las Vegas. Like, he's got a lot of money waiting for him the moment that he retires. He'll be fine. I look at it like, can your legacy be helped? And with Luka, it potentially can. If Luka wasn't on the team, what are you doing outside of just, I don't know, playing in a rec league, essentially?
Well, and it was interesting. He gave the typical LeBron-coded answer. Actually, I do want to play that. When LeBron was asked about his thoughts on what has to happen with the team, this I do think belies that this offseason might not just be about will he play next year or not.
How many more years will we see you play?
I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. Something I sit down with my family, my wife, and my support group and kind of just talk through it and see what happens. And then just have a conversation with myself on how long I want to continue to play.
So just go ahead and cut that one off. That's the wrong one. That's about will he, you know, how many more years do you want to play?
Sure.
I think when he was asked about, like, okay, where do you get the team from here? Where do they need to go? This tells a lot, too.
No comment. I'll never say that because my guy AD said what he needed, and then he was gone the following week. So I got no comment. I put that uniform on every night. I gave everything I had, and that's all that matters.
Now there's some tongue in cheek there. He was trying to be funny, and LeBron's not funny, but he does try to be funny.
It's interesting that he was in like a good mood after that happened.
So what was interesting to me is he does have a no movement clause, which I think is pretty interesting. It wouldn't surprise me if the Lakers decided the best path forward going into next year with Luka is a path without LeBron.
All right, what's that look like?
I don't know, because I was trying to figure out, like, where does, like, if you said, where does Kevin Durant go? It's like, just get traded to OKC and get them over the hump and then retire.
Right. If you talk about, like, we've brought up Ja Morant, send him to Miami.
Yeah.
We can find a team for LeBron. You can find a team for LeBron as well. I don't know how that makes the Lakers any better. And if I'm Luka, I'm pretty mad. The thing about LeBron is he was actually was pretty good this year. LeBron didn't play bad basketball. He just didn't have a lot of players around him. Lakers had no depth. They had no rim protection. They just weren't very good as a collective. But it wasn't LeBron's fault. He was playing really good basketball, especially up until the part that they got Luka.
I do think it's funny, though, that people have called back to the Mark Williams deal and being like, if the Lakers don't call that off, this series would have looked so different. No, it wouldn't. No. I hate to be this guy because, again, we're going to bring it right back to J.J. Redick. He just got outcoached. He got embarrassed.
You got outcoached. You didn't have enough players, too. And then the idea that Luka and LeBron were supposed to fit like a glove in 2 months was also kind of wildly aggressive by everyone to think.
Yeah, I think with a player thing, like, you still have LeBron and you have Luka. This thing, and granted, Luka was just getting abused all over the court, like, and there's the questions of does Luka need to lose? There's so many different things here that I think are really, really interesting. But, yeah, I mean, I guarantee you one of the three conversations that has to happen is what could we get for LeBron
market looks like? LeBron go open bidding and LeBron says, I just want to play somewhere. I guess it's a package deal. Bronny comes too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you get Bronny and LeBron.
Add another $1.5 million in the, the trade kicker.
It'd be really awkward if they traded LeBron and Bronny was still, like, in the Lakers G League fighting for a spot, getting, like, rotational minutes. So, we'll make it a package deal. Who's in competition here?
Yeah, the funny thing is, like,
to also then pay him the $50 million, by the way.
Well, and so here's the thing. I actually think there would be no shortage of teams. I think it's more like, where would LeBron actually go? Like, would you have to trade him across town?
Because he wants to stay in L.A. for sure.
Is it, okay, Golden State, do you do LeBron for Jimmy Butler? Does that make you better?
Just, but none of it makes sense because it's not gonna happen. I mean, J.J. Redick knows. They just need more players, and they need a... Luka and LeBron can win. I don't know that they'll ever win a title, but they can win.
Well, I kind of feel like, listen, so the answer there, listen, I just think it's really interesting. Like, okay, Luka and Kyrie with a bunch of role players got to the finals. What are the role players that get you with Luka and LeBron, right? Like, it is one, at least one rim protector, like a really good.
He's going to have guys that he trusts. I mean, J.J. Redick, he didn't even trust all starting five. He was putting them out there. He trusted four guys in that series. And it's amazing that Austin Reeves ended up being one of them, but that's where we ended up with that.
So Austin Reeves, not good in that series.
No, but he was so good during that final stretch of the regular season. Like, people started to believe Austin Reeves was like a legitimate part of a big three. That's how good he was.
Dustin in D.C., putting in a Jim Dangle gif of when he got new boots,
yeah,
and saying LeBron going to Houston for the retirement tour.
That's right.
To one up Jeter.
Astros gave Jeter these signature Houston Astros boots, and they had like the two engraved in them. But I was also like, they're way too much Houston for Derek Jeter there. You think Derek Jeter's ever wearing these boots? Well, yeah, they go on these big fantastical tours, and the Jeter one was so funny because it was like, I think he thought Astros fans were just going to be like, this is the greatest thing ever, and nobody cared.
But here's the thing. The NBA, the retirement tour for LeBron has to be more gaudy than a baseball retirement tour, right?
Well, especially because LeBron's impacted the game itself so much more than Jeter did.
I mean, a pair of cowboy boots doesn't get it done for LeBron.
But he goes to, like, Washington, for instance. What are the Wizards going to do for him outside of potentially give him something that... they can't do that many things.
Give him some shares in Potter World?
Yeah, like, I don't know. What do you want him... Do you want him to give him, like a... Is there like a minimum price tag on the LeBron retirement tour gift?
Oh, I mean, it's James Harden's duffel bag.
Yeah. What do the Cavs give him?
I mean, there's got to be a statue, right?
Is that the unveiling of the LeBron statue,
like,
outside
his last
the Rocket
game here, and then it's going to be randomly in like December?
Yeah.
Or do you just retire?
Weird.
Do you retire LeBron's jersey, cuz you don't usually give this kind of thing away when a guy's still playing for another team? Do you just retire his jersey there? I like that. What did the Cavs get LeBron when he retires in his retirement tour? I don't think you can go big enough with LeBron.
I'm just trying to think of what the most massive thing you can do. Like, the biggest display. You might be right. Retire his jersey early for Cleveland.
The statue. Like, those are two things that if you milk the LeBron thing
But then you take away the idea that, like, 5 years from now or 3 years from now, whenever you need it, If your attendance isn't great, everyone comes out for a LeBron retirement jersey.
I think that's where you're right. Like, because I was thinking about that, and I was like, well, why would you give those things away? Because, I mean, honestly, even if the Cavs win a championship this year with this team, 2 years from now, when LeBron comes back, you're selling out that building, and the tickets are going to be through the roof.
What should be mandatory? They should put the LeBron James Sherwin Williams sign back up for that, like, stretch that he's there for the final game, like that one week. That should all be, it should be the old image too, by the way, and that should exist for a week.
Didn't they like break that and tear that down?
Well, yeah, and now the Cavs have it. Like, it's
I was
not
being
like,
a literal Louie there. That's on me, dog.
A little bit. It's so funny. You make fun of literal Louie. I can't even say it right. You make fun of them consistently.
And then occasionally
But then
I'll
occasionally
be one.
You are one, yeah.
That's because 100% of the time I'm Hungarian, and we're all literal Louies. 216-474-0092. What's the right retirement tour gift for the Cavs to give LeBron James when he finally does retire? It sure as hell won't be this year.
I just love the idea of the hurdle for you was, well, they tore that down. We can't recreate that.
I thought they busted it up, but I'm like,
we can't possibly.
I guess you can reprint it.
That technology doesn't exist.
In case we missed it, coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.